This is Middlebrow, where big ideas undergo the digital martyrdom. This is John Mark Reynolds at Torrey Honors Institute, Biola University, with my colleagues Fred Sanders and Paul Spears. And the big idea we're going to put through the digital martyrdom today, or which will martyr us, as some of the church fathers said, the white martyrdom, the bloodless martyrdom of marriage. I think it's too bad, in one way, to start with talk about martyrdom, because marriage is mostly about joy and about fellowship between two people. It's what I think Peter Marshall called it, the highest halls of human happiness, this side of paradise, the former Senate chaplain, Peter Marshall. So we're going to have some thoughts about marriage, what it is. Fred Sanders is with me, and he has an article about the state of the unions. What is marriage in 21st century America?
Yeah, this is an article from MSN Lifestyle written by Mackenzie Brown. It's June 18. It's kind of a fun celebratory article. It's called The State of Our Unions, and Mackenzie Brown looks at nine couples, intentionally chosen to show, I think, the range and diversity of marriage relationships. And so just to go through them really quickly, not to read Brown's article, which you can get at MSN Lifestyle online. Starts with covenant marriage, and
it's like uber Christian marriage.
Yeah. Let me just read the first two sentences of this one. When they wed 8 years ago, Jennifer and Jason chose to have a covenant marriage, a special type of marriage. This kind of makes you think, ooh, this is going to be weird. What's this about? That generally requires premarital counseling and makes it hard to get divorced. As an expression.
A special type.
The way marriage was until, 1972 and all of America. I see. My grandparents' marriage.
There you go.
I would like to think my marriage.
Yeah. So as an expression, not only of their deep commitment to each other, but also of their Christian faith. So it goes on from there, but they highlight that as covenant marriage. Then they go to a second marriage, and without going into lots of details, just people who had previous marriages and are now marrying each other.
Is this intentionally or just that's the way life worked out? Because we probably have some listeners who say, wow, I meant to have a covenant marriage, but my partner did something terrible. My spouse did something bad. Is this a lifestyle choice where, maybe I'll have a second marriage. This is my tryout.
No, this isn't. This was not intentional serial monogamy. This was... got married in college, never should have gotten married in the first place. I mean, I guess you could, that's the big question here is how is that related to covenant marriage? Were people, I just feel weird even saying covenant marriage as if it should have a little trademark beside it.
Covenant marriage brought to you by Mike Huckabee, I believe was a big advocate of covenant marriage in Arkansas.
Yeah. The third one is polyamorous marriage. A couple in Canada who are profiled who say, oh yeah, we still date people.
I had an Aunt Polly who'd say that's bad.
So we're married, but
still date people.
We also have boyfriends and girlfriends.
Date means sex too. Let's not be too clever about this.
That's right.
Yeah. It's an open marriage. It used to be called in the '60s, I think.
That's right. And they say very strange things like, I have a mom and I have aunts, and just because I love aunts doesn't mean I don't love my mom in a special way.
But it's not polygamy, which would make a formal relationship between all the people in the household.
Right. Yeah.
You just have special love for your spouse and then other kinds of love for the other people you date.
At Biola, for a while, we had this weird category, friends with benefits, people that you were going to do immoral things with, but you weren't dating. And so it sounds like this is just another way of taking...
That wasn't only at Biola, but
oh,
yes.
Oh, okay, sure.
You're saying undergraduates,
even Christian ones, developed this bizarro category that we had to fight against. Fortunately, it seems to have faded, actually.
The next, Mackenzie Brown picks a couple that they call average marriage. They just go with people who get married when she was 25 and he was 27. The average ages of American newlyweds, 3 children. That's the average number, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Doesn't say much about that.
How is that different than covenant marriage? They didn't get premarital counseling. They tried to be stupid.
Yeah, well, I want to.
They both had a free weekend.
Yeah, I want to come back to that and ask why. What it even means to call something covenant marriage and identify it as special and serious. Anyway, then there's a long distance marriage where they had to spend a few years apart for. Well, they thought that they had to spend a few years apart for graduate school and careers. an executive at an insurance company and a trader and an investment bank.
Yeah. Again, my question is how different that actually is. I feel like a couple of bad categories, like these open marriages, or what are they called? What's the new trendy word?
Polyamorous.
For them? Polyamorous marriages are getting smuggled in with stuff that people always had to live with. So you marry a sea captain, he's going to be gone a lot. You accept that, and he struggles with morality, and you struggle with morality.
Right.
And it's a very
this happens to our military people.
Right. Like, it's just very Victorian. Now, getting into it on purpose and some other kind of jobs that aren't necessary for national defense or for the maintenance of our economy in an absolute sense,
right?
Maybe a little questionable, but that's not really a new category of marriage, is it?
Right.
I can find it in a Trollope novel, I don't feel like it's new.
Exactly. How about
that's
child?
The standard.
Here's a marriage it's focused a on as child-free by choice. These are 40-somethings.
That would be new, not in a Trollope novel.
Yeah. Here, I think, is this the wife? Right,
tell me a little bit about that.
I just don't have the gene for wanting a child.
I think a child wanting gene.
Philosophy run amok.
Let me try that philosophically. If there were a gene for not wanting children, how could it spread through the gene pool? Is that a bad argument?
I'm just looking for a gene for not wanting.
Yeah.
What that would look like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe she's saying she lacks the desire.
Right. She says they've gone the dog and cat route. And they always feel attacked by people who want to know why they're not having children.
So child-free really means they've humanized animals.
Yeah, and also here's the quote from him. We don't need to watch our children grow to measure how far we've come as a couple. On our anniversary, we think back to what we were doing this time last year.
So,
and inevitably there was something. Dot. It goes on
that
from
empty
there.
Empty air was brought to you by my struggle not to think that these are just
narcissists. There's an ellipse
exactly
there.
In a selfish light.
The quote goes on. Something trivial, like when our AC died in August, etc.
Let me pause because I do have friends, and I'm one or two. Hopefully, you guys that can't have children, and you know they have come to grips with it, and they live.
That's radically different.
That's different, and we should say that. That's not funny, and that's not a narcissistic choice.
No. As a matter of fact, most of the time that those people have found that they can't have children, that is a sad part of their life that they've learned to deal with.
We have a alum I've prayed for about this in the last year, and so we're talking about people who are, if you use the biblical language, barren by choice.
Mm-hmm.
So they've gone in and said, hey, here's a bad thing. We're going to make sure it happens to us.
Well, right. Isn't it? And it's just so driven by your narcissistic tendencies and your desire to like, but you got to get up and like change diapers and I've got a golf game.
I'm even willing to imagine somebody who decided they should get married and they work with lepers or some group of people that it would be very bad to bring children into the world.
In light of their ministry or something
like
that.
You wonder if they should get married, given my view of birth control and things. We talk a little bit about that later. Mm-hmm. Maybe they shouldn't get married and they should just be like Paul, single for the ministry. But I'm even open to that.
That's a Jane Eyre, St. John marriage.
Yeah. I'm not open to the Jane Eyre. You pretty much refuted even my openness. But I'm trying to be open to some people that this wouldn't be narcissistic and selfish. But I'm running out of categories as you push me. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, it does succeed in raising the question, what is marriage for?
And right.
You don't have to be a Thomist to say marriage is for a number of goods, but one of them has to be openness to children.
Yeah. Well, what's good about this article, I think, is it reminds us of something that major media often does, which is they smuggle in things that pretty much everyone who's a Christian would object to, along with lots of things that nobody would object to. You find them in Trollope novels where people become sea captains to save, you know, Britain from France, and they have to be gone a lot, and we accept the fact that that's difficult and try to help them. And by blending all these things, they can make it look like marriage is changing more than it is so that we just have to accept the other categories.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's sneaky, maybe unintentionally sneaky, but I see it a lot in this kind of thing. Go ahead, Fred. Yeah. Are there a couple more?
Well, yeah. The next one after child-free by choice is, in fact, same-sex marriage. Nothing more to say about that. Gina, a classroom aide, and her spouse got married in Massachusetts after 14 years together, were legally married in 2004.
Well, I blogged about this, and the only thing I'll say about that, let's leave aside the immorality of homosexual activity, though I'll be clear, as a biblical Christian who thinks the Bible's true, I think homosexual activity is always immoral. But let's assume I didn't believe that, and I thought it could be moral as an assumption. whatever that relationship is between a woman and a woman or a man and a man, it is precisely not marriage.
By definition.
By definition. And why does that matter? Why can't we just redefine the word? Because men and women, this sounds really foolish to say, aren't the same. With the exception of a sort of radical group of feminists who believe men and women are interchangeable. And when I was a feminist, I wasn't that kind of feminist. I believed with Carol Gilligan that women brought a different voice to the table, uniquely female, for whatever reason. That coming together of the other, where I as a man meet the other in hope. And just today, I had one expectation, and I think in a very typical way, painting with broad brush, hope had a different expectation, and I had to deal with otherness. Was good for me and was a different kind of project than if I had been married to a man where the similarities wouldn't have just made things easier, just different. So marriage is an idea, namely bringing the other together in an image like God and man coming together, two others, very different, and making a oneness out of it. So whatever that couple is doing in the so-called gay marriage, they're not doing that. And I think it's too bad. We're going to end up with something like covenant marriage. Because it's too long, I bet we start calling them covenants.
Mm-hmm.
Where if marriage is, and hopefully the state of California will change their mind about that, cheapened in this way, we'll just the idea will need a new word. We'll call it covenants. Oh, I'm getting into a covenant with Hope. Mm-hmm. And I'll never say I'm married to her. Because marriage is some legal thing I did with her. Who cares? Did anybody have any thoughts about that? It's a long rant for me, but I blogged about it.
That's right. The quote here from Gina in the article is, we don't take marriage for granted. We saw marriage as a way to protect our family, and this is a same-sex marriage, and to stand up and have our community recognize us as a serious relationship. It wasn't because we were dishonoring what marriage can be in its highest form. It was because we wanted to be part of something that we honored very deeply.
Yeah, and the problem is they just can't be part of that in the same way.
Yeah, how do you honor it in its highest form?
Look, I have friends, literally have friends who are nuns. And whatever it is to be a nun, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, mm-hmm. I'm just never going to experience it. And if I decided to declare that I was a nun and try to experience whatever...
A married nun.
Yeah, mysterious community thing goes on in a nunnery, I simply would have changed the whole deal and nuns would retreat into, like, covenant nunhood or something.
Right. No, you don't have to do the gender bend there to make that point, right? You could say the same thing about being a monk. You could just decide to call your life monasticism.
Yes.
And
my monastic friends would have to invent a new word.
Right. There'd be covenant monks then.
So what all you get, covenant monks... All you get is category.
In other words, monks like everybody thought monks were for 2,000 years.
Well, so the language choices actually really matter here.
Yeah.
Because they actually point to something real.
Well, it just means that that friends I have that don't agree with me on this are never going to be married.
Right.
Anymore.
No matter what they call it.
Whatever is going on in a gay marriage, quote unquote, I'm never going to experience it because try as I might, I'm not a gay man.
Yeah. So your marriage and their marriage are radically different, even though you use the same language.
Even if there's no morality involved, they're different kinds of projects. And my point about marriage from the state's point of view is that the state has no vested interest in helping us all be friends. Like, we don't have friend relationships from
the
state.
Nor do we have tax reduction for friends.
Right. 99% of children are going to be made in traditional relationships. And so the state knows how hard it is for two others to come together, stay together, mommy and daddy, to raise kids. And I'll say the radical thing. I think, in general, kids are better off being raised by mommies and daddies because they mostly will be. And try to help make good mommies and daddies instead of not, or making the exception the rule. But I'm not really strong about this. I'd rather the state got out of the marriage business altogether than do what we're doing now. So I'm just libertarian enough to say, yeah, well, let's get rid of the whole thing then.
Yeah. The last, just to round out the article, the last two in the MSN lifestyle article were two people who got married later in life, ages 48 and 49, sudden getting married, first marriages. And then
that is Jane Eyre.
Yeah. And then people who got married very young, I think at age 18 and 20.
That's my mom.
Yeah. So those are interesting comparisons as well, to say you're so set in your ways by your late 40s that then to suddenly decide you're actually going to share your entire life with somebody. I think that shows up certain decisions you've made.
Well, let's talk about age of marriage, Paul. People come to you and get marriage counseling. I know. Should I get married? Will I get married? People listening out there, I bet we have more singles than not. out of our listeners. It's just a guess, but I bet we have a lot of singles anyway. What's a good age to get married in our culture? This is a culturally relative thing.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny because one of our alum is actually living in D.C. and working for a congressman. And
That won't identify whoever it is.
Well, I'm being
okay, just most general.
And she was just talking about, now she didn't help either, how...
That's hard being left-handed for this, and having red hair.
And she works
for this congressman from Montana. No,
some of that was made up, by the way.
Yeah, it was. The red hair in Montana, right?
And the congressman.
Anyway,
now, if you tell them that it was no good, we're trying to cover for you.
Anyway,
here, Paul.
Anyway, so it's interesting that when she talks about her friends from Biola and from Torrey, that they're shocked that their friends are married at 25 or 26 or
right.
even 29.
Right.
They're like, what do you mean they're getting married? Shouldn't they be establishing their career?
Yes.
And then once you establish your career, so about 33 probably is sort of, it's a biological question.
Yes.
You know, like, when are you going to start having children, and a career establishing question. And so I think that what happens is you find yourself abandoning some of the opportunities that you have, because there really is a sense that having children is a younger person's, you know, pursuit, too.
Well, it is. I'm 44. I'll be 45 a week from today. There are more and more people my age having their first kids, especially
mm-hmm.
men.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be very difficult for a woman to have her first child at my age because, whether we like it or not, nature does also believe that men and women aren't exactly the same. But I'm too old to be having a first child. By and large, I should be in the older, wise dad category of life, not in the I'm going to chase LD and Ian and Mary Kate and Jane around the table and do that kind of thing. I'm just not up to it physically the way I was in my late 20s
mm-hmm.
When kids started to come along. I'm not old. I'm not infirm. I'm, you know, pretty fit, work out four times a week, but I'm not in that stage of life.
Could you just do some push-ups for us?
Yeah.
Show?
No.
I mean, we've also got a culture where it's easy to not mature, right? We've got this extended adolescence.
Exactly right.
I think some guys, let me just talk about guys, are never going to grow up. The best they can do is maybe get married and have kids right away so that they can still be playing with Legos in their 30s.
Right.
Because they're going to anyway. So they can just play. They can play from the other side of the table.
At least the fear yeah. of having to support your family makes you grow up.
Yeah, I hate to say this, but I really do think, and it's been written about a lot, and we blog about it a lot. I think everybody here has spoken about it, that we really do live in a culture that, particularly for men, and I know this sounds harsh, allows us to be Peter Pans forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then when we're missing our mothers, when we're missing womanhood, we try to go get Wendy and kidnap her and bring her to Neverland, where she can be some sort of ersatz mother. Now, in the famous story, of course, the sexuality, you can't have sexuality in Neverland. And some men, Fred, that you were talking about, try to never grow up, play with their Lego toys, get married to a woman, have relations with that woman. They're sort of like their mother, sort of like their wife, sort of like their mistress, and they live in some kind of hedonistic paradise,
right.
or they try to. As a person who's made a lot of mistakes, I can tell you that that doesn't work. You need to grow up. You need to face reality, or you'll find yourself very lonely and very much alone. And if women are out there thinking they should marry this kind of Peter Pan kind of guy, Paul makes the point it's better to be single than to find yourself in the grip of some ministry-destroying marriage, because singleness also can be a high and noble calling from God. And in the culture that we live in, maybe a calling that more and more of our students face. Final thoughts on marriage as we go around the table. Fred Sanders.
Just coming back to that idea of covenant marriage, I don't know what sort of brand name or product that has to be in the future, but doing premarital counseling with people in my small group from church, my wife and I do a session in a young engaged couples class that we have at church. This is kind of the model we pursue. We do premarital counseling. We talk about making divorce very difficult, you know, planning on not divorcing, and everyone says that the day they're at the altar, but to actually construct your life such that it's clear to everyone,
yeah.
you, your spouse, your community, your kids, that divorce is not a thing you're planning on or leaving open as an option.
Yeah, and I think fundamentally that has to be directly connected with your theological commitments and how you see Christ's relationship with the church, and how that covenant that you're making is one that is not
broken, like contracts are broken today, yes, but that there's something much more deep going on. If I break a contract with my builder, I don't go cry in the corner about it. But if somebody breaks a contract with someone that they are enmeshed with in the deepest parts of their soul, it is devastating. And I think that that is clearly representative of the kind of relationship that we get together in when we marry.
Well, the good news is there's healing, hope, and redemption inside of Christ. And I'm certainly a person who is grateful for that. I can look at this as someone who wants to have the very highest standards in his marriage and be passionate, having made almost every relational mistake in my early 20s that you can possibly make, and having made all the sorts of excuses that people make, oh, I'm so young, or I want this, or I want that, or I need to follow my heart. Here's what I can say. When we face up to our desires and we call them wickedness, there's healing, hope, and reconciliation in Christ. You can be deeply and passionately happy. You can be deeply, passionately in love, but it's not going to begin by hiding from the fact that real marriage, what we're calling covenant marriage, I guess, for want of a better term, has to begin with this kind of non-contractual relationship. It's covenant before God. So for Middlebrow, where big ideas, in this case marriage, have undergone the digital, I guess, bloodless white martyrdom, this is John Mark Reynolds for Scriptorium, Torrey Honors Institute, and Biola University.